Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Show. I'm using my remote studio here in Bend, Oregon. There's Matt Wilhelm back in his home digs in the greater Cleveland Metroplex.
Yes, sir.
Matt Wilhelm, once again, man, welcome to the Tim May Show, my co-host for the season. And I don't know if we have a lot to talk about or a little bit to talk about when it comes to Ohio State football, but you know, people have seen my first blush on this on my LettermanRowe.com videos that we do. But you know, here we are a little bit removed from the game. Ohio State has an off week this week, has time to lick its wounds, and I'm just wondering, man, the 32-31 loss at Oregon, first time Ohio State, just the second time Ohio State's played here. First time since 1967, but this time it was a Big Ten game. You watched it. I watched it. What was your take?
It's great. It's always great to be with you, Tim. And, of course, it's not the result that we wanted as a Buckeye fan, but I believe for the sake of college football, it was a matchup that everybody kind of anticipated. Yeah. I saw a lot of scores, predictions, in a one, a two, a three, or a 4-point game, so that it was going to be, very much a dogfight. It's unfortunate we came out on the downside of this football game for sure. I have also, and again, I know this, you know this, the Buckeyes know this, Buckeye Nation needs to know this, that, again, all goals, set forth on any goal board at the start of this football season, going undefeated isn't necessarily one of them, right? Do you want to win them all? Of course, every competitor wants to win them all. But the opportunity to beat the team up north, to win a Big Ten championship, to make the college football playoff and potentially win a national championship are all still very much available to this football team. And to your point, they're licking their wounds. And I know that, from an offensive line standpoint, we're going to have to get healthy. I think we're going to lose, Simmons for the remainder of the year, if I'm not mistaken. Right. You'll probably have more insight on that than I do. So that means, a backup is now going to become a starter for the remainder of the football season. There may be some shuffling, I would imagine, by Coach Fry and Coach Chip Kelly along the offensive line to find the best five guys, the best rotation of six guys, maybe, along that line. But then I think the one thing that I'll say, the hasty, angry Matt Wilhelm as a Buckeye fan, does come out with some of the, some of the things that we addressed, defensively, almost giving up 500 yards. I would say we talked about, ahead of this football game, Will Howard and his ability to be the guy at Ohio State in the big game. And I know that you said, he's won a conference championship in the Big 12, but it's not the Big 10. It's not Ohio State. And what a blunder. What a blunder to – and again, and just so you're aware, this is the Matt Wilhelm, not just for this show, but just for my own peace of mind is I went back, watched it on YouTube, and went like frame by frame, second by second on the last 6 seconds. And, you can't look down the field for 3.5, 4 seconds. Then finally decide to take off, which then gets you back to the line of scrimmage with 2 seconds remaining, and then attempt to get as much as you can, get down, and still get a timeout. So very much a mismanagement. And again, we'll get into it, but I've got notes everywhere. I've got, the touchdown given up before halftime, up 21-15. Yeah. We run a simulated pressure. We blitz our two backers, drop all four defensive linemen, and we have one-on-one coverage. Denzel Burke gets run by for a touchdown before half, steals the momentum, right? And then I'll just say, lastly, Will Howard, again, you cannot take a sack in a two-minute situation, regardless of the number of timeouts we have, because it completely throws, the data and analytics into their favor. And this is what I'll have. This is for Buckeye Nation out there. We snapped the ball on our first play with 1:47 left on the clock after a touchback. We snapped the second play with 1:25. We snapped the third play with 1 minute. We snapped the play on our fourth play with 41 seconds. It took us 1:06 to go 22 yards from the 25 to our own 47. Right? Is that 47? 22. So just and then you get the big play to Abuka. I question the play calling, by Chip Kelly in this moment. And that's what I want to hear, you know, especially during this open date, accountability, because, and I've talked to football dads, other football players, other football coaches, because of the circles that I run in. And what I'm a little befuddled by is, and I know that Will Howard talked about it in his postgame press conference, they ran a flood route into the boundary.
Yeah.
We didn't have to run routes towards the boundary because we had a timeout. So why are we not running any type of, you know, mesh, slants, dig type concepts? Or did Will Howard work backside on that last play to Jeremiah Smith, who actually had a little bit of separation on a big dig route that he could have delivered and got down and then called the timeout? You would have gained a hell of a lot more yards than he could have with his leg. So I question a lot of decisions by this staff, because you lost the game with one timeout left.
Yes.
In a time crunch that both Will Howard and Chip Kelly and Ryan Day did not use appropriately, in my opinion.
Yeah, here's my take too. I want to get your opinion on this. Once you got to the 28-yard line with Emeka Egbuka on that big pass,
out of bounds.
Bottom line is, you've got a kicker who just kicked a 44 yard field goal earlier and nailed it by like 15, 20 yards. I mean, he has the leg Jaden Fielding does. The thing I would have done in retrospect, and what I was literally saying in the press box as I'm watching, is, you know, run three times up the middle, and then kick, or two times really, leave yourself a little cushion and kick the field goal. And, let it ride on that, man. You've got a field goal kicker there for a reason. You've scrambled to get yourself back in position, but instead they run a route and run a pass, get a holding call, I think is what it was. No, it was the pass interference.
The OPI, which is 15.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll say this, you live by, and I'm not going to be critical. I'll say this. I know that fans are going to go, you know, these are college students, but these are paid professionals now with the current, you know, landscape of college football. Yes. And I'm not going to be critical of Jeremiah Smith because he's an immense talent. He's probably one of our best players, if not our best player on the football team at this moment. But there's a couple of other things that in these moments, talking about the sequence of timing, what a lot of people don't understand is Jeremiah Smith catching the pass earlier in the series for 9 yards and not 10, and not being a first down. So running a route to 11 or 12, turning around, catching the football and getting, or catching the ball for 8. And then he just kind of went down to avoid contact. Maybe he thought he had the first down, but that costs 20 some seconds by the time you get up, spot the ball, get a play in, and then snap the football next. And that's 20 some seconds. Whereas if he had gotten 10 yards, not 9, the clock would have stopped. They would have taken 6 to 10 seconds to have the ball spotted while you're calling a play and getting up, getting lined up in a specific formation. And it costs you maybe 8 to 10, not 20 to 25. So I would also just say, I thought Will Howard looked a little too much to the freshman, on that last drive for him to be able to make the big play, to be able to make the big catch. And it's unfortunate that that we came out of the way that we did. I would also say that I know the narrative by, Will Howard and some of the other players was they didn't beat us, we beat ourselves. I love Ryan Day saying, leave no doubt. And all we did was play and leave doubt most of the day. But then also mixed extra point, missed field goal, missed 2-point play, missed on fourth and goal. So then Oregon can say, well, we kind of beat ourselves and still won.
Yeah.
So I do think it kind of, I don't say it leaves Ohio State reeling in any regards, but it leaves a lot of, self looking at self, looking at the roster, players looking at themselves, coaches looking at the players, coaches looking at themselves and specific decisions. Because here's the thing. This is a huge game. Absolutely. Will we play at Penn State in a huge game? Likely another top 10 matchup. Yes.
Yeah.
Will we play against that team up north who's beat us in the last 3 years in a row? I know it's at our place. Yes. Should we go play and make the college football playoff and play a big, maybe round one, potentially now game without a bye, as Oregon kind of sits in the pole position along with Penn State being undefeated in the Big Ten? Yes. So there's a lot of big games where big calls, big moments, clock management in tight game situations will come into play. And I just hope that this is an opportunity for us to reflect and learn from it.
Yeah, I'm just like you said, when you go home with a timeout in your pocket and as much time as
in a time crunch.
As much time as was killed on that last drive, I'm with you 100%. My good buddy Jeff Snook, he and I hung out here in Oregon after the game. We're seeing some sights because Ohio State has the week off, and number two, I've never been to Oregon, but you know we've dissected this thing up and down and around. And he was critical of the same things you are. And it's mainly, you never know when you've got to use that timeout in that situation, but you never want to go home with it still in your pocket. And you just nailed a couple of the moments there. There's always ways to stop a clock, you know, once you have the football. Well, but don't let the clock just run, you know.
And, sure. I'll just say this. I mean, again, there's a narrative out there, whether it's confirmed or not, that, you know, Dan Lanning ran 12 out there as a strategy to trade 5 yards for 4 seconds. But again, going back to the play call, it's three players into the boundary where they actually had the extra defender to take away the flood routes, which should actually like work the sidelines, which we don't need to because we have a timeout. And then it's a long throw from the other hash to a freshman receiver who Will Howard's kind of been looking at mostly on that drive, other than that, the route to Ibuka. So, you know, it gets batted away, and it just, and again, you don't gain any yards. You needed to do some, you have time to run in breaking mesh type routes because you have that timeout. And I don't know. And oh, by the way, if you run that, you don't have to put the football on a hash to allow the kicker to have to kick between 40 and 50 plus yarder from a hash. It's going to kick from somewhere in the middle of the field, which is probably to his advantage from a data standpoint as well, to kick much more of a straighter, longer kick than an angled longer kick for a kicker. But it's frustrating. Everything is still very much in front of us. You've got, Nebraska coming out of the bye, who's going to be playing very well. They're going to be big noon kickoff this weekend. They're going to be, you know, very up for our football game. You've got an undefeated Indiana football team. You've got an undefeated Penn State football team on the road. A couple of other games, then the big one that really matters to most of Ohio and Buckeye Nation across the world. And again, I will just say, I know unfinished business keeps ringing in my brain coming from all of these guys that came back, you know, for this football season, and everything is still ahead of them. I also find myself from a business standpoint questioning all these guys defensively. They got paid a lot of money via NIL to come back and couldn't make a stop. Yeah. It reminds me of the same guys last year that in situations when we needed to get a stop, you know, and force a field goal or, you know, force a punt and get the ball back to our offense to be opportunistic. And they just can't. And the last thing that I'll say, and this goes back to, for me as a player, back to 2002, man, when we played Cliff Kingsbury, who was a Heisman hopeful, when we played Jason Gesser, who was a Heisman hopeful, when we played Larry Johnson, who was a Heisman hopeful, it was like, we literally wanted to erase their name from the top five Heisman hopeful list because of what our defense could do to you. Yes. And what's frustrating about this is a silver bullet defensive player. And again, long season left is, I mean, Dylan Gabriel went from like outside of the top five to like number one or number two, either ahead of or just behind Travis Hunter from Colorado. 341, two touchdowns, you know, one on the ground. So it's frustrating. And, we'll see where we go from here.
What I liked about Dylan Gabriel and Ohio State let it happen. The naked boot where he ran for 27 yards for a touchdown. You knew he had it in him. I mean, I thought he was a cool customer, even when he wasn't playing well at times. I thought he was quite the cool customer. You know, Will Howard ran for a touchdown also. So,
sure.
But the bottom line is, like you just said, even though the defense played poorly at times, one individual had a tough night. Denzel Burke. I mean, there's no hiding that. I mean, that's
yeah. What's the insight? What's the insight? Is it eye discipline? Is it? I mean, is it something he's been doing up? I mean, jumping on double moves. Like, dude, give up a 5-yard catch and not give up a 50-yard touchdown over your head.
Right, and those were tough. Those were killers. But like you just pointed out, Ohio State had the ball in its hands with plenty of time to go down the field and score the winning score, whether it be a touchdown or a field goal, and didn't get it done. Also, and Ryan Day obviously took responsibility for that, and he should. And we just delineated the clock management was not good, and you got two head coaches sitting there. You know, you got Ryan Day, and you've got Chip Kelly, who's a former head coach, longtime head coach, and it just didn't. You know, for whatever reason, didn't happen. And then number three, you've got a veteran quarterback. And I'm not going to say I thought Will Howard was kind of put between a rock and a hard place, really. But where I agree with you is he took a hitch, a little hitch, and then decided he needed to run. And that's when you just take the hitch and you throw it out of bounds. You still have a conceivable, makeable field goal from about 55 yards if you throw the ball away. You understand what I'm saying?
100%. And to be very honest with you, the hitch, I watched the 6-second play frame by frame, pausing and stopping.
Which he didn't have the luxury of doing as the play was happening. Go ahead.
Of course. But my whole point in saying that is when he actually throws the hitch, looking at the All-22, there is a route on the sideline that does have space that he could have thrown for a 5-yard gain, right?
Gotcha.
So as opposed to the 42, it's now in the 37. You know, is it still a 50-plus yard field goal? Yes. Or something around it? Yes. But I would rather – and, by the way, if he catches it and does not get out of bounds, you have the timeout.
Yes.
Or if he catches it and steps out of bounds, it's before expiration of the clock. So that decision – and then thinking, when he throws the hitch, he's still about 4 or 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage with 3 seconds or 4 seconds left on the clock. I think it's 3. And then he takes off and runs it. And again, he's back at the line of scrimmage with 2 seconds left on the clock, runs for 7 to 9, and then goes into the action of sliding, which is probably 1 second by itself after he gained 7 yards. It's unfortunate. And it stinks to go down that way. Truthfully, in my gut, when Ibuka caught the football on the sideline and went out of bounds, I was like, this, it's going to be a chip shot field goal with the amount of time that was left on the clock with one timeout. To your point, it could have been quarterback run if they're expecting pass, or a quarterback, he just takes off and runs it, slides on an earlier down, you use the timeout, it leaves you the opportunity to kick a field goal, to win the put it on your kicker, because you put the ball in a situation to be able to be kicked, not have a timeout left, and not lose the way that we did.
True. Everything true. Let me ask you a quickie, Matt. Let's go back to the defense real quick. Ohio State has a week and a half. The coaches have a week and a half now left to get some things straightened out. You got Dylan Raiola, a freshman coming in. Of course, Nebraska and Indiana play this week. Who knew that was going to be a showdown game, right? In the Big Ten.
So good for the Big Ten. UCLA has been a little bit underwhelming. I think Washington's kind of been underwhelming. USC, the jury is still out on on who they are. But I think that the surprises is the resurged Nebraska, which is great for football because they're a legacy, a blue blood type program.
Yes.
And, Kurt Cignetti there in Indiana. I watched his opening press conference in Indiana. He was just like, Google me. I've won everywhere I've been. And to see him following through with that promise to transfer portal kids, the kids that were there, the administrators that are paying a bunch of money, the millions of dollars are going into the renovations there in Bloomington, centered around the football program, is great to see and great for the Big Ten.
Absolutely, man. I guess he's a hell of a football coach. Like you said, just Google him. And, instead of debating it, right? And he brought all those guys in with him and stuff.
Yes.
So it was quite heartening. What is your take on Oregon? Does Oregon have staying power in this in this college football playoff new scenario, 12 teams, et cetera, what impressed you most about Oregon, I guess is what I'm asking.
I think their overall their preparation, and I think they while being on the West Coast, they may not have player. Well, we're going to know these players now because they made a bunch of plays against us. But sometimes those teams out west that you don't get to watch very often in years past, you didn't really get a good vibe of them. And I know we talked in preparation for this football game that I watch as much Oregon football as I can possibly see when it's out west because of the way that they do it. And yes. I think not. Going back to Chip Kelly, they've had some voids in between where they haven't been great. The Cristobal, who left there to go to Miami. Dan Lanning gets his job, kind of continued the recruiting and the same mindset for the program. They're impressive. I know that the resume to a lot of pundits out there is actually better than Texas's, yes. Which means that they should, in some cases be number one. But I think they're going to have to earn that with maybe one more, ranked opponent where Texas, I think what they've got a big game coming up. Is it Texas, Georgia this week?
Yeah.
So they win that, they're going to be like locked in at number one for a while until they have a blunder. But I think Oregon's impressive. I think you've got a very experienced Dylan Gabriel at quarterback who's playing better week by week. You look at the skill players around him. I know they don't necessarily have names. They have names now. Their ability to run the football. I think it was the first time that Ohio State had given up a 100-yard rusher this fall football season, although that we have not really been challenged the way that we knew Oregon would challenge us. And then I think, defensively, they were missing their best pass rusher who should come back, who, got hurt midweek. So he'll only make them better. And all in all, going back into our pregame show following the Iowa football game is I love Dan Lanning. I think Dan Lanning and his pedigree and where he's come from as a defensive football coach, he's got an edge about him. He's got a spark about him. He's a younger guy that brings the energy. I think he almost coaches with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And this win, just seeing some of the stuff, him celebrating some of the sound bites that he's been given off after the fact, exudes this like confidence about Oregon, about what they're doing and how special that place is. And again, to be frankly, it's like, knowing that I have a recruitable young son, I was like, man, I want my son, or I would love to be a part of a culture like that, because I think it's only, on an incline with what he's got going on there.
I want to tell you something. The facilities, first time I've ever been here, or been to Oregon too. And I kind of had a chance to go into the football facilities where you had to pick up your credentials. And what an impressive place, but what an impressive complex, not just for football, but for sports. And
when you got Phil Knight in your hip pocket, to be able to stroke a check for what you need.
But
yes.
Wait a minute. Let me interrupt you. You can have that, but then to do it right. You know what I mean? You can have all the money and
when the winning and facilities get married up appropriately, it becomes a special place. Yes. And that's what I think you're going to see. And I think there's a vibe out there that I've been hearing through some of the recruiting trails and I think, Trey McNutt from Shaker Heights, Richard McNutt's, son, he's a five-star safety from Ohio, has offers from basically, everywhere in the country, is choosing to leave Ohio and go play football there. That's not on accident. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Washingtons and the UCLAs and the Oregons of the world do their very best to come into Big Ten country, the Midwest, predominantly where all the teams are, and pluck some kids to add, toughness and grit that comes from, Midwest and Big Ten football, and add that to what they're doing as you get some of the islands, the West Coast, California, Oregon, Washington, Hawaii, some of the Polynesians, blend it all in from a talent standpoint.
What a melting pot, I guess is what I was going to get to. Hey, real quick, what would be your advice to Denzel Burke these next 2 weeks? I mean, Denzel is always – exuded confidence, but you could see some of that confidence. A lot of it seemed to erode as that first half ensued. I mean, that was a tough second quarter for anybody.
Sure.
What? Because we can talk about scheme and things like that, but individually, we could talk about whether when you've got two great safeties, like I think Ohio State still does, Lathan Ransom and Caleb Downs, why not, you know, why would you end up with a guy deep with nobody else chasing him but Denzel? You understand what I'm saying?
There are
all kinds of ways you could have gone back. But what would be just specifically your advice for Denzel Burke?
Well, I've been in those games where you feel like, you know, you missed a tackle that, you know, that popped a run that might, that might have been like the tipping point, or missed multiple tackles that led to big runs that set up for touchdowns and so on. So I've been in that situation. First of all, you feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders. And I think it's the culture of the team, which I think Ohio State has to, and the players and coaches to remove what feels like a burden or that weight off of his shoulders. Because here's the thing, we're going to need Denzel Burke. We're going to need Denzel Burke in, you know, against Nebraska and the rest of the way. And Denzel Burke, you know, does it hurt some draft stock? Sure. But at this point right now, you have many opportunities to, you know, solidify who they thought you were again. You can't change it. You have to evaluate it. And I think you have to just be honest with yourself. And I think the circle of, you know, that brotherhood in the defensive backfield, I think Coach Tim Walton, Coach Knowles, you know, building him back up, but also, you know, just don't go to a place like Ohio State or play a high level of football and just get patty caked and get a pat on the back and go, hey, you know, dust your shoes off and, you know, it'll be okay. Just get right back up.
Right.
There's going to be, you know, critical eyes and critical conversations about what happened. And I think for the sake of the rest of the season, now that is on film and you can't change it, Denzel Burke's going to see double moves from a team every single game from this point forward.
Yes.
To test whatever Oregon saw to be able to test him. To flash the football, the stutter go, the slant and go, whatever the specific routes were. I think a lot of them were double moves. To test his eye discipline, to test his patience, to test his technique, you know, his pedal, all the things that go into playing DB at extremely high level. And I think that's on Tim Walton. That's on Denzel Burke. That's on Jim Knowles. And I think to transition just quickly from Denzel Burke and Tim Walton to Jim Knowles is, I think Jim Knowles, you know, schematically not changed the scheme, but in regards to what calls and when, may have to also be critically looked at to maybe put a half the field safety in certain situations on specific down and distances over top, like a little bit of an umbrella over these guys. And if we're not capable throughout a football game of just locking guys up and playing zero and going, Denzel's going to wipe this guy off the board. And, you know, Igbinosin's going to wipe this guy off the board and just play straight man. You may have to tweak those things. Cause like I said, not only for Denzel, but now for this defense, it's a part of your resume and teams will study it week in, week out and attempt to remaster it and put their own little twist on it until you fix it and eradicate it. You're going to see double moves. You're going to see the QB run, you know, you're going to some of these little like discipline, eye discipline, you know, technique things and fit things until they're addressed. You're going to see them each and every week.
Yeah. And Denzel Burke wasn't the only one who had a tough couple of plays either, you know, on the defensive side. And that's exactly what you're talking about. I want to ask you this though, from just a pure football standpoint, after the first couple of plays, when Denzel clearly was having a little bit of a, you know, like you said, a patience problem more than anything else, in my opinion, because you're just sitting there almost with a hair trigger. It looked like on a couple of those plays, but why is it tough to then defensively from a coordinator standpoint or a Tim Walton standpoint, why is it tough to like kind of like make a little bit of an alteration in your plan? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And give him that little help over the top. And they did do that a little bit, but I'm not sure whether that was the plan or whether that was a, you know, where they were scrambling from a alteration standpoint missed game.
Yeah, well, there's something to be said about putting in, you know, 4 to 6 days worth of work in a specific plan, repping it all week against specific routes that it builds confidence. And again, if there's anything that you don't master and or like throughout the week, you scrap it and you feel like, oh, our guys can't hold up against this, or we need to have, you know, the certain situation. And I'm sure that, you know, the staff had all the confidence in the world for Denzel Burke This was just a, I hate to say it's like not a personal attack on him, but a personal attack at his technique, at his eye discipline, that something was on film. Because it was like, why Denzel every time and not Igbinosin? Why Denzel and not anybody else in the defense? So there was something that they saw. And I think it was a quote by a wide receiver from Oregon after the game, a little presser I saw on some social media site. Evan Stewart. Yes. Yeah. And it was, and basically just said bombs away.
Yeah.
Was what he said, which means they felt like they could get on top of him, and Dillon Gabriel just needs to throw the football out there and drop bombs. You know?
I tell you what, let me, And the interesting thing was, this reminded me of the Michigan game 2 years ago when J.J. McCarthy came into Ohio Stadium. The word on him was they would not throw the ball deep. You know what I mean? He had literally rarely thrown the ball deep. Oregon had trouble getting the ball down the field the first several games this year.
Yes.
A little bit of a breakout the week before, but you thought, you know, I mean, all you're prepping too on the Ohio State side is, well, they don't really challenge you deep much, you know what I mean? And if you go into that with that sort of mind frame, you know, sometimes it's kind of hard to change the map, isn't it? When you're
it definitely is. Lost. So like, I'll just say, like, you know, if there's something that they saw about Denzel for it to be him, not anybody else, at least consistently. But then this is the one thing about how you prepare to play an opponent, how you prepare to play a player that you're going to be covering most of the day is, and this is what goes through the mind of a player is like, so for Denzel, he's in a specific coverage with a specific technique that he's, you know, supposed to play. On this specific down and distance, at this point on the field, in this specific formation with the split by the wide receiver, he's probably run a lot of slants or hitches, right?
Yeah.
Which is why he's kind of jumping them, because you want to make it competitive, you know, PBU. You want it to be a catch tackle to minimize gain. You get your cleats in the ground and you're out of your break, you know, coming up on that receiver or planting and cutting to make a play on that receiver. And there may have been, and I don't know this to be a fact because I'm not in the locker room or in the study room. It's like, but those might be tendency breakers. You know what I mean? Where we've always run hitches in this down and distance, in this formation with this split. They're going to know that too. And I bet, and it's like, whether it's the Marshall game, the Iowa game, the Michigan State game, some game earlier, somebody ran a double move or a hitch on Denzel, and he was just downhill on the hitch, downhill on it. Catch tackle, catch tackle, catch tackle, PBU, PBU. I bet we can get into that same formation, same down and distance, and we can run a hitch and go, and we can get him.
Yeah,
that's a receiver bringing it to a receiver coach. That's a receiver coach studying it with his players. Then they go to the coordinator and they beat it into his head and go, we can get him. And then you practice it. It works in practice on a scout team guy that doesn't know what's coming. And then you can go, oh, we're going to get Denzel. You know, we're going to get him once. We didn't think we had multiple times.
Exactly. It's funny, in modern college football, the old days, me and my buddy Mike Lawrence, he was one of my best friend growing up, but we would play basically neighborhood games, you know, for want of another term. I never played actually varsity football anywhere, but we would set people up in a game. I was a quarterback, he was a wide receiver, and we would set people up with, you know, outs and quick ends, and all of a sudden just out, we call it the out and up. You know, we had the Jack Snow special, which was a slant, and we had the out and up, which I would just like pump and then just throw the ball out there and he'd go run it down, you know. And the point is, though, now you do that, you could do that, you could set people up by video that they're watching of how you've played previously, like you said, self scout.
100%.
Okay, we're going to do this now. And it was clear he was prepared for something different. And it's tough on him, but you know, it kind of goes to the core of the preparation too, you know, across the board, right?
It does. And the one thing that it's very easy for us to sit behind, you know, these cameras or fans to sit at home and go, well, why didn't Knowles do this? And why didn't Knowles do that? And it's like, and to be very honest with you, to do some of those things that do make sense, and to make that change and put some type of umbrella or a half safety behind him, that's not who Ohio State is. Ohio State is just so reliant on playing man free, you know, man on the edges, you know, press man with either a single safety or zero if we're bringing a blitz. They're just so reliant on Igbinosin and Denzel Burke of doing their job, of getting up all up in their sniffer, you know what I mean, and playing man press coverage, that doing anything else would actually be like becoming someone that we're not, you know? And I know for the sake of like not giving up the big play, but, you know, after they get Denzel the first time, it's like, ah, you know, fool me once, you know, it's like, but it was like, it was consistent. And I think, and that's the one thing that happens, you know, as a defensive back, and I've never played defensive back, but I know that like I've been around a lot of defenses with, you know, great players, but it's like they have to have the shortest memories. And that's like the resilience of a defensive back who can give up a touchdown and come back the next drive and make the pass breakup, come up on the tackle and make the play, get the interception. It's available to them, but it's tough for a 19, 20, 21, 22 year old kid to block out. I'm losing us this football game because of my play. And then I'm also relied upon to go make that play that could win us the game.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of in between the years that plays into this as well.
Yeah. The individual mistakes in that game finally added up on top of the fact they had 8 penalties in that game. The biggest being the offensive pass interference call on Jeremiah Smith. I thought that was the correct call. I can understand the call being made. You could let it go, but, That official opted not to let it go. I mean, you know, it all adds up. I wanted to ask you this last thing. Ohio State only dropped to number 4 in the AP poll.
Yep.
I mean, I think a lot of people were expecting a little bit of a fall, but you know what? They lost by 1 point on the road to now the number 2 team. And I was impressed by the way the AP voters, Associated Press media voters, handled that, weren't you?
I absolutely was. I thought we would probably be like 5 or 6, to be very honest with you, because there's other quality football teams, some that also have one loss. And also what that one loss was and who was against, you know, Bama and Vandy, you know, Tennessee and Georgia. Arkansas, unranked opponents, you know, Georgia and Kentucky, correct. That losing the way that we did, into the quality of an opponent, the fact that it was a back and again, as in my open, it's like it delivered as a 2-3 matchup, right? And I've even seen in some other you know, pundits polls that are not AP or coaches polls, like they just flip-flopped Ohio State and Oregon. You know, Oregon jumped to 2, we fell to 3 in their eyes because of the game. And here's the thing, like, you know, we're talking about, you know, being in a 1-point game with a chance to win it. And again, they made the play, or the lack of us making a play was the reason why it didn't happen. But it was not a 14-point game where we had to score, get a stop, get the ball back, go down the field and score a touchdown to win the football game. It's just, you know, we ran out of time. There's some slight mismanagement, but it's still, in the eyes of the AP voters and the reason why we didn't fall, it's still a championship level football team losing by 1 to another championship level football team.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick before you go, the Matt Wilhelm of the current team, Cody Simon, was the only defensive player we got to talk to after the game. And I just asked him facetiously, you know, this was an instant classic when it comes to just watching, you know, a flip-flop score game. You got the lead, now I got the lead. Now you got the lead, now I got the lead. It was a classic, but it delivered in the drama department. But when you're in the midst of it and you lose that game, you don't feel like it's a classic at all, right?
No, and I mean, the throwbacks to, you know, my instant classics that are being, you know, rerun on ESPN are all Buckeye wins.
Yeah.
You know, which is why I feel really good about, you know, where we're at from a Buckeye lore and a Buckeye classic standpoint. But it's unfortunate. And in some cases, I think to go back to, you know, Nick Saban's point about, I think it's, you know, it was a text message that he had sent to Kirby Smart after losing to Alabama. And it was, this might be the best thing to ever happen to you.
Yeah.
And I will just leave that. It's not really maybe at my core this, you know, a few days just after this loss in a game that we probably should have won. But the silver lining is maybe this is the best thing to ever happen to us. While, as I mentioned in the open, all of our goals, all of their goals are still absolutely reachable and attainable and right in front of us.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Matt Wilhelm. I'm Tim May. And by the way, Matt, I still firmly believe Oregon and Ohio State are going to meet in December in Lucas Oil Stadium for the Big Ten Championship. I know we've got these Cinderellas, and Cinderellas must be taken seriously.
Yes.
I have that, still have that gut feel as I'm sitting here still in Oregon, videotaping this. What is your take on that? I think these were two really good teams.
I agree. And I think what, the entire reason, whether you're for or against it, about these additions to the Big Ten or the new, call it, like, say, the new Big Ten, is it's tantalizing every weekend, right?
Yes.
Who's Minnesota going to beat this week, right? Who's, what West Coast team is playing versus UCLA or USC? You know, these matchups are a little wonky and funky. We're not so used to them being conference games, but again, Indiana being what Indiana represents in the Big Ten. I know Wisconsin's lost their quarterback for the year, but they're going to get better as the season goes on. Like, will they challenge and get get it right? So I think it's exactly what the Big Ten conference, and the reason why there's an $87 billion TV deal or whatever it is, or maybe that's the NFL one and ours is only worth like 50, but there's a reason why is because the Big Ten conference, along with the SEC, and I call them like the two best conferences in college football, it's must watch football every weekend. And yes, you've got, I think, seven ranked Big Ten teams in the top 25. I want to also say that I want to say, is it 14 or 16? Like 16 of the top 25 teams come from the Big Ten or the SEC. So anybody can beat anybody. And the level of football is the best of the best.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Matt Wilhelm. I'm Tim May. This is the Tim May Show. Until next week, we will see you there.